the idea of utilizing obesity drugs to prevent other diseases came from this issue that we weren't getting FDA approval of obesity drugs. Let's say it's actually going to treat, you know, high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease and fatty liver disease. That's where this comes from. Okay. So we've got to still get to the point that obesity is causing these things. And we're still, so we're basically, those of us in the field are banging down the door saying, yes, this anti-obesity agent, yes, it's going to also cure MASH.
Welcome to the GLP-1 Podcast Show, a monthly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and all that's working in the world of metabolic health and obesity care. Our aspiration is to be the first place you are going to go to find out what's happening, the latest updates, and the latest research in GLP-1 science and clinical practice.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the GLP-1 Podcast Show. I'm your host, Arisha Moyes, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by Dr. Caroline Apovian. So Dr. Caroline Apovian is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, as well as the co-director of the Center of Weight Management and Wellness in the divisions of endocrinology, diabetes, and hypertension at Brigham and Women's Health Hospital. For over 30 years, Dr. Apovian has held a position at the forefront of obesity and nutrition fields. She's one of the world's premier weight management experts, and she's really distinguished herself as a leading researcher, healthcare provider, teacher, and New York Times bestselling author. So it really is a privilege to have you here with us today, Dr. Apovian. Do you want to give us a little bit of background on the work that you've been doing these past couple of years?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for inviting me on this podcast. Excited to be talking to you today. I have been in the field of obesity medicine for 35 years, and I'm one of the co-founders of the subspecialty of obesity medicine. So, you know, I had a mentor named George Blackburn, who did the first gastric bypass bariatric procedure in New England in 1973. And he's called the father of nutrition in medicine. And I did my fellowship with him when I was at Harvard at the New England Deaconess Hospital, where I did residency in medicine and then went into nutrition and metabolism for my fellowship. And so that was a while back. A few of us understood that the prevalence of obesity was increasing in this country, and we were really wanting to know why. And so we realized with a few discoveries that we can talk about that obesity is a disease. So I spent, when I finished my fellowship, I started weight management programs on the East Coast. I've started 5. And my latest one is at the Brigham at Harvard, where I'm co-director of the Center for Weight Management and Wellness. Last year, my team and I, just on the medical end, saw 16,000 patients for weight, obesity, and type 2 diabetes and other conditions. So we're very busy. 42% of Americans have this disease, and we need to really treat it. And now we have great medications. And we're just at the tip of the iceberg, and we can talk about that.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Wow, amazing. We're really lucky to have, you know, an expert who's kind of seen it all. So it's really nice to talk to you today. So here we kind of like to hone in on the GLP aspect. I know obesity in itself, we could talk about that forever and ever and ever. But now we have these new options, these new drugs, which we haven't had in our toolbox. So can you start off by giving us an overview of the current GLP-1 treatment options that are available and how they kind of differ from one another?
We realized much later on that the GLP-1 has receptors all through the body, and it works in the gut to delay gastric emptying, and it works in the brain. So what we have right now is we have really three GLP-1 medications for obesity. All right, there are a few more for diabetes, but we'll focus on obesity. Saxenda was the first to come out. It is liraglutide, and it's a daily injection. Gives you about 6% weight loss. That came out sometime in 2013. But the big one that came, the big one that really changed the field is Wegovy. Came out a few years ago. It's semaglutide. It's a once a week injection. And the reason why it changed the game is because it went way beyond 10% weight loss. So all the other oral medications and Saxenda gave maximum 10% weight loss. Wegovy, average weight loss in 1 year, 16.7%. Okay. And then a few years later, Zepbound came out. Zepbound is tirzepatide, which is GLP-1 and GIP, two hormones in one molecule. And that, unbelievably, giving 21% weight loss. So basically doubling the weight loss we've seen with older agents, the older agents like phentermine, Contrave, which is bupropion and naltrexone. These work in the brain. Orlistat is a fat blocker, very little weight loss, 4% maybe. So going way beyond what we've seen in drugs in the past.
Okay, so we have three drugs on the market for weight loss. There's maybe a couple other for diabetes.
Well, there are a few. These are the incretin hormones. Now, we like to call them, the way we distinguish these from everything else, the other oral agents, we call them highly effective obesity medications, HEOM.
Okay. You talked a little bit about these other anti-obesity medications. How does GLP-1 receptor agonist compare to them as well as other treatment options? So bariatric surgery, for example, lifestyle interventions, behavioral therapy, in terms of efficacy, I guess you spoke about, but safety and just patient outcomes in general.
So you mentioned several tools that we have to treat obesity. Yes, we have lifestyle intervention. Let's talk about that first. We now understand that obesity is a disease and not a matter of willpower. You might ask, why is obesity is a disease? Why is it a disease? It's a disease because your body weight is under tight regulation by lots of hormones in the body. What hormones are we talking about? Leptin? Leptin is a hormone discovered in 1995 by Rudy Leibel and colleagues. Comes from fat tissue, goes to the brain and tells the brain, okay, you're full, there's enough fat. We have enough fat for survival. Okay. If you lose weight by diet and exercise, you lose fat tissue. Less fat tissue, less leptin is produced. And so less leptin goes to the brain, and you get the other side of the coin coming out, which is where we don't have enough fat to survive. We get really hungry. Okay. That kind of hunger when you lose weight, and when you lose weight with diet and exercise, I don't know if you've ever felt that kind of hunger. I have. It's at a at a certain point, you can't stop thinking about food, right? Those are your hormones wanting you to get back to a set point that your body thinks is good for survival. Why is obesity a disease? Somehow, there's a defect in that pathway where people who have obesity defend a higher body weight set point because their body thinks that less than that, they're going to starve to death. It's erroneous. There's a defect, right? We think that defect is from inflammation from ultra-processed foods. So something in our environment has caused the increase in prevalence of obesity in this country and worldwide. Why do we know that? Because our genes don't work that quickly. Our genes don't change that quickly. They change over millions of years. Our obesity prevalence has increased over the past 50 years, right? So we know it must be the environment. We think it's ultra-processed food. Something in the food is creating a defect or inflammation, possibly in the brain, where the signals saying you're full cannot get in. You defend a higher body weight. Now, what was the... So that is why obesity is a disease. All right. So I think I just explained why diet and exercise doesn't work, right? All right. It doesn't work because it's like, if you compare obesity to another disease, let's say hypertension, you can lower your blood pressure by meditating. You actually can. But how long does that last? As long as you're meditating. So it doesn't work, right? Because hypertension is a disease. Obesity is a disease. You can diet and exercise. Now, are some people who diet and exercise, can they keep the weight off forever? Yes. We know from the National Weight Control Registry, which is a registry of 10,000 people who've been able to keep off 50 pounds at least for 10 years. And we know what they do. It's a registry. And we query them. How are you doing? Did you still keep your weight off? What are you doing? What they do is they're on a 1400 calorie diet every single day. They weigh themselves every morning. They eat the same thing for breakfast every day. They exercise 2500 calories per week religiously. And they're basically vigilant about diet and exercise. That's how they do it. And we also know these people have cognitive restraint. They're able to somehow fight the powerful hormones that are trying to get them back to their original body weight. Not everybody can do that. We all have different genes. And some people just really, they would have to spend all day deciding what to eat next. You can't do that. So diet and exercise, for the most part, some people can maybe lose 5%, keep it off. But usually we say that diet and exercise is really for people who just have maybe 10 pounds to lose. They don't really have the disease. So what else do we have? We have medications. Medications are for BMI, the BMI is your weight in kilograms of your height in meters squared. You can look on a table and find your BMI. If your BMI is over 25, you're overweight. If your BMI is over 30, you have obesity. So medication is for BMI over 30 or over 27 with at least one complication like diabetes or heart disease or reflux or something. Medications are, obesity medications. The older ones are phentermine, FDA approved in 1959 when we thought that obesity was not a disease. So it was approved for 3 months use only, still out there for 3 months. Phentermine is like a crude appetite suppressant, goes to the brain, shuts off appetite. It's a real drug. It has side effects like high blood pressure, palpitations, insomnia. We also have the combination of bupropion, which is an antidepressant, and naltrexone, which is an anti-addiction agent. The brand name is Contrave. It can really help with cravings. We also have Qsymia, which is a combination of phentermine and topiramate. Topiramate is an antipsychotic, anticonvulsant agent. And then we have the three that I mentioned, liraglutide, semaglutide, tirzepatide, the GLP-1s, which have changed the, really been game changers in the field of obesity medicine. If your BMI is over 40, meaning you have class 3 obesity, or over 35 with diabetes or sleep apnea, you are a candidate for bariatric surgery. We like to call it metabolic bariatric surgery because it's really a metabolic surgery. We do the two operations we most usually do in the United States are the sleeve gastrectomy and the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass. The sleeve gastrectomy, it's less than an hour in the operating room. Take the lower curvature of the stomach out, and you're out of the hospital in one night, and you lose, 25% of your body weight over a year on average, and you keep it off. The Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is a little more complicated. You create a small pouch instead of the stomach. You bring up a piece of jejunum, and that average weight loss is 33 to 35%. Again, the weight comes off in a year, 9 to 12 months or maximum 16 months, and you keep it off indefinitely. There is some weight regain, but guess what? There is some weight regain with medications as well, because this is a chronic disease that we're talking about. There are other procedures that are reserved for very, very high BMIs, like BMI over 50, over 60. And those are the biliopancreatic diversion and duodenal switch procedures. And those just bypass a little bit more of the intestine. So how does bariatric surgery work? It works by changing the gut hormones, the gut hormone milieu. So when food goes down the new tract, it hits the cells that produce those satiety hormones earlier, and you reduce your body weight set point. So we learned all about our new GLP-1 medications from studying why metabolic surgery works. We used to think metabolic surgery worked by restricting the pouch, making it really small so you couldn't eat a lot of food, and malabsorbing nutrients with the bypass. You bypass a piece of intestine. That's not how it works. It works by changing the gut hormone milieu. And so our new medications are attempts at getting to a medical gastric bypass. So doing what the surgery does medically. We're certainly not there yet because metabolic surgery gives you much, much more weight loss. But maybe in the future with new medications and combinations of incretin hormones coming out, we may get there.
It almost feels full circle, getting to the mechanism of these drugs from prior weight loss strategies. And I really, really like that you mentioned kind of reframing obesity as a chronic disease, because I think that really helps get rid of some of the stigma that's associated with, I guess, medically treating obesity. And I do like the parallel between, for hypertension, we have antihypertensives. For diabetes, we have anti-glycemic medication. No one's ever pointing the blame at these patients for using medication. So it's nice that we finally can say the same for obesity now that we have these tools, which we didn't have for a very long time. And I guess my question would be, as the conversation, the clinical conversation is shifting from weight loss drugs more towards, I guess, broader metabolic health and disease prevention. You know, these drugs have been used for cardiovascular prevention now, and there's a number of emerging indications. Do you think this is more prevalent? Like, do you see this more commonly in your practice, or is it still like these are still considered weight loss drugs?
That's a very good question. It's interesting. The idea that these drugs also treat and prevent heart disease and diabetes really comes out of the history. Let's talk about the history. When these drugs started to come out, obesity agents, they were called weight loss drugs. This is before GLP-1s, weight loss drugs. And it would, you know, where the stigma was much worse then than it is now, but we still have stigma now. So at that time, these were considered weight loss drugs, and, you know, you're cheating if you do it, because if you use them because you're not on a diet or exercise program, you're just taking these drugs. And even bariatric surgery was considered cheating, taking the easy way out. I've had patients actually tell me that. No, doc, I don't want that surgery. I want to do it the hard way. I know I can do it. You would never say that about heart disease. Your doctor tells you, you need a coronary artery bypass graft. Oh, no, doc, that's the easy way out, right? You would never say that. So we got to a point where we have these agents that are getting more and more effective. And the FDA, I went in front of the FDA in 2013 with a few colleagues. They weren't approving any of our drugs. They weren't approving sibutramine. They weren't approving lorcaserin. And we said, why are you doing this? You've got to approve some of these drugs. We have an obesity problem in the United States. So they finally did. 2013, they approved Contrave, Belvic, and a few others after we went and talked to them. So the idea of utilizing obesity drugs to prevent other diseases came from this issue that we weren't getting FDA approval of obesity drugs. Let's say it's actually going to treat, you know, high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease and fatty liver disease. That's where this comes from. Okay. So we've got to still get to the point that obesity is causing these things. And we're still... So we're basically, those of us in the field are banging down the door saying, yes, this anti-obesity agent, yes, it's going to also cure MASH, right? Fatty liver disease. And yes, the SELECT trial using Wegovy for 5 years, yes, you saw a cardiovascular risk reduction of 20%. We shouldn't have to be proving this over and over again, that obesity is a disease and causes other diseases, but we have to. Okay, so I am of the opinion that getting drugs out there to treat obesity should be one thing that we do. And we know now that we have these brand new drugs that are agonists of naturally occurring hormones, we know they're going to treat everything else. But we have to keep proving it because of the stigma around obesity, but also the drugs that came before this, what I mentioned, phentermine, sibutramine, which is Meridia, they're associated with elevations in heart disease risk because they're actual drugs that cause elevations in heart rate and pulse. Whereas, why are the incretin hormones so different? They're agonists of naturally occurring hormones. I tell patients, you know, it's not really a drug, it's a vitamin. We're giving you just a little bit more than your body already makes. Your body makes these drugs. Your body makes these hormones. We're just giving you more to try to reduce your body weight set point that was increased by the environment.
I think the idea that we really have to convince these agencies that obesity is an issue, it really highlights the systemic level issues that we have that are kind of driven by public opinion and the stigma. And kind of tying into this, there's been a growing discussion about, I guess, the more cosmetic usage of GLP-1s. From your perspective, do you think their use is appropriate or safe, even in individuals without diabetes, without obesity, like the definition of obesity that you provided, or another clear indication?
We debated, actually, David Allison. You may wanna interview him for this podcast because he has a very different opinion than I do. So please tell him I sent you, okay?
Okay.
We debated him because he's of the opinion that, you know, if you want to use a GLP-1 to lose weight, you should be able to, whether or not you have obesity. So the examples he gave to us are himself, for example, himself. He works a lot. And he doesn't want to stop working because he has to eat. He wants to keep working and not have hunger. So he wants to be able to take a GLP-1 so he can work more. All right, one example. Another example, he feels that people who need to look good to make a living, like actresses and actors and movie stars, they should be able to take a GLP-1. To fit into their dress or look really slim. He feels that, you know, as long as they know the risks, as long as they know what they're getting into, they should be able to do that. Or he even said, well, in the Army, if you're in the Army and you're fighting a war, you don't want to have to be hungry and eat. So take a GLP-1 for military reasons. So I'm really against that idea because obesity is a disease. These are, yes, they're naturally occurring agonists. They're agonists of naturally occurring agents, but they're still drugs and they're altering your body weight set point. And they are correcting a defect. Do we have any evidence that taking GLP-1s for cosmetic reasons or any other reason, if you don't have obesity, is good for you? We have zero evidence. No one has done studies looking at, you know, the use of GLP-1s for patients with a BMI of 22, because they want to lose 10 pounds. No one has done that work. People who do take GLP-1s for cosmetic reasons, when they lose the weight, they're going to stop taking the medication, right? Typically, right? Guess what happens? You're going to gain the weight back. Why? Because it's giving you more of a hormone that suppresses appetite and delays gastric emptying, all of which cause you to eat less. And so when you remove that hormone, your hunger is going to come back. And in some cases, depending on the genetics of the person, your hunger comes back in a very, very aggressive way where you really overeat, actually. much like if you were on, you know, a very low calorie diet. Let's say you go on a 500 calorie diet for 2 weeks and then you suddenly stop. You're pretty much, you know, for most people, their hunger comes back very aggressively, and you may even overeat at several meals before you feel full. So I'm very much against the use of GLP-1s for cosmetic reasons. It could be that in the end, if we hypothesize, what would this do? What would this do? So you take a GLP-1, lose 10 pounds, stop it, and regain the weight. We don't know enough about body composition changes to know whether or not when you regain that weight, are you going to gain the same amount of muscle back, or is it going to be more fat? We have no idea. All right. Because most of the time, people who take GLP-1s for cosmetic reasons or not, are not doing enough exercise and not protecting their muscle mass. So I do think that it's you're basically at your own risk taking GLP-1s if you don't have obesity.
So it actually might do more harm than good. I think it's pretty well documented, this idea of, well, weight cycling. So the idea that you lose weight and gain it back, it's associated with adverse cardiovascular, metabolic, even psychological events. So it is really is, I think, the responsibility of the clinician to make sure that these drugs are used responsibly. But unfortunately, with the landscape that we have right now, with these drugs going off patent very soon, I think the whole world is going to change in terms of prescriptions. There's going to be way more access and availability. There's also telehealth. There's also, I see things on social media where people are able to acquire these drugs without having proper monitoring. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, I guess.
Yes. I think we really need to do more research into the mechanisms of weight regain and the timing. I think that what we'll find, we've done research. I have a colleague, my colleagues and I do research. We overfeed patients in the lab and we see what's going on. And we found that rapid overfeeding, so giving someone many more calories than they need, causes oxidative stress. So, and that oxidative stress can cause changes in the mitochondria, in the muscle, changes in the bloodstream that may also go to the brain and lead to inflammation in the brain. Bottom line, people who take GLP-1s and then stop them, who regain the weight quickly, they may be worse off than they were before. So a lot of research to do to educate and inform the public before they take GLP-1s indiscriminately because of the cosmetic aspect.
So before we wrap this up, I guess what key messages would you like clinicians or even patients listening to take away about the evolving role of GLP-1 therapies in metabolic health and in obesity management?
Well, first of all, we have drugs that have been game changers in the people to help people suffering from obesity and its complications. We still have to figure out what the cause of the increase in prevalence of obesity is actually and attack it. There's lots of evidence to point the gun at ultra-processed foods, but we have to really prove it definitively. And then we have to do something about it. But you know what? It may be the GLP-1s that alter people's taste that then the society may turn around and say, you know what? I don't feel like eating that McDonald's hamburger. And that may change marketers. That may change the industry. and force them to provide healthier food, you see? So that could be a plus that the GLP-1s are going to do. But in order for that to happen, we have to get more access to GLP-1s. We have 42% of Americans with obesity. Maybe 5% or less of those people are getting GLP-1 medications. That's a tragedy. Why is that happening? There were shortages. Insurance wouldn't cover. They're expensive. What we have to do now is to get pharma companies to lower the price, insurers to cover these life-saving drugs only for people with obesity, and get more access out there. So I talked about ultra-processed foods, the environment, the GLP-1s. There will be more GLP-1s, combinations of GLP-1s coming out in the future. In late December, we may have the first oral GLP-1 that may provide more access because it will be cheaper to make because it's oral. So that is exciting. I'm very excited about that. But in the end, recognize that if we really reduce the stigma surrounding obesity and we really treat it like the chronic disease that it is, we need to recognize that many more people in this country should have metabolic surgery to treat their obesity. BMI over 40, over 35 with diabetes and sleep apnea, metabolic surgery should be offered. So we should treat obesity the way we treat, let's say, cancer. We go to a cancer center, we're offered surgery, XRT, chemo, not one or the other. If you have significant obesity with a BMI over 40, you should go to a obesity center like ours, offered surgery, GLP-1s and other medications, and lifestyle, not one or the other. And when people recognize the multidisciplinary treatment of obesity, that's when we're going to end up reducing that stigma.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Apovian, for joining us today and really highlighting the chronic disease that is obesity, as well as the role that GLP-1s can now play in the management of this disease. It's been a pleasure really having you on this podcast. I learned a lot, I'm sure viewers as well. And to the listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe for future conversations exploring the science and also the practice behind today's one of most promising metabolic therapies, if I do say so myself.
Such a pleasure speaking to you, and happy to join again.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.